Coot was a lesser spirit in the area, sort of a dock worker of the Never Never. If anyone had seen anything of Victor Sells, Toot would have, or would know someone who had. Toot dithered for a while, fluttering back and forth around the meal, but slowly getting closer. Fairies and honey, moths and flame. Toot had fallen for this several times before, and it wasn't in the nature of a fae to keep memories for very long, or to change their essential natures. All the same, I held my breath. The fairy finally hunkered down, picked up the bread, dipped it in the honey, and then greedily gobbled it down. The circle closed with a little snap that occurred just at the edge of my hearing. The effect on Toot was immediate. He screamed a shrill little scream like a trapped rabbit and took off towards the lake in a buzzing flurry of wings. At the perimeter of the circle, he smacked into something as solid as a brick wall, and a little puff of silver motes exploded out from him in a cloud. Toot grunted and fell onto his little fairy ass on the earth. "I should have known," he exclaimed, as I approached from the trees. His voice was high-pitched, but more like a little kid's than an exaggerated kind of fairy voices I've heard in cartoons. "Now I remember where I've seen those plates before. You ugly, sneaky, ham-handed, big-nosed, flat-footed mortal worm."
"Hiya, Toot," I told him. "Do you remember our deal from last time, or do we need to go over it again?" Toot glared defiantly up at me and stomped his foot on the ground. More silver fairy dust puffed out from the impact.
"Release me," he demanded, "or I will tell the queen."
"If I don't release you," I pointed out, "you can't tell the queen. And you know just as well as I do what she would say about any dewdrop fairy who was silly enough to get himself caught with the lure of bread and milk and honey." Toot crossed his arms defiantly over his chest.
"I warn you, mortal, release me now, or you will feel the awful, terrible, irresistible might of fairy magic. I will rot your teeth from your head, take your eyes from their sockets, fill your mouth with dung and your ears with worms."
"Hit me with your best shot," I told him. "After that, we can talk about what you need to get out of that circle."
I called his bluff.
I always did, but he probably wouldn't remember the details very well. If you live a few hundred years, you tend to forget the little things. Toot sulked and kicked up a little spray of dirt with one tiny foot.
"You could at least pretend to be afraid, Harry."
"Sorry, Toot, I don't have the time."
"Time, time," Toot complained. "Is that all you mortals can ever think about? Everyone's complaining about time. The whole city rushes left and right, screaming about being late and honking horns. You people used to have it right, you know."
I bore the lecture with good nature. Toot could never keep his mind on the same subject long enough to be really trying in any case.
"Why, I remember the folk who lived here before you pale, wheezy guys came in. And they never complained about ulcers or..."
Toot's eyes wandered to the bread and milk and honey again, and glinted. He sauntered that way, and then snatched the remaining bread, sopped up all the honey with it, and eating it with greedy bird-like motions.
"This is good stuff, Harry. None of that funny stuff in it we get sometimes."
"Preservatives," I said.
"Whatever."
Toot drank the milk down, too, in a long pull, and then promptly fell down on his back, patted at his rounded tummy.
"All right," he said. "Now, let me out."
"Not yet, Toot. I need something first." Toot scowled up at me.
"You wizards, always needing something. I really could do the thing with the dung, you know."
He stood up and folded his arms haughtily over his chest, looking up at me as though I weren't a dozen times taller than he.
"Very well," he said, his tone lofty. "I have deigned to grant you a single request of some small nature for the generous gift of your cuisine."
I worked to keep a straight face.
"That's very kind of you."
Toot sniffed, and somehow managed to look down his little pug nose at me.
"It is in my nature to be both benevolent and wise."
I nodded, as though this were a very great wisdom.
"Uh-huh.
Look, Toot, I need to know if you were around this place for the last few nights, or know someone who was. I'm looking for someone, and maybe he came here."
"And if I tell you," Toot said, "I take it you will disassemble this circle, which has, by some odd coincidence, no doubt, made its way around me?"
"It would be only reasonable," I said, in all seriousness. Toot seemed to consider it, as though he might be inclined not to cooperate, and then nodded.
"Very well. You will have the information you wish. Release me."
I narrowed my eyes.
"Are you sure?
Do you promise? Toot stamped his foot again, scattering more silver dust motes.
Harry, you are ruining the drama.
I folded my arms. I want to hear you promise. Toot threw up his hands.
Fine, fine, fine. I promise, I promise, I promise.
I'll dig up whatever you want to know. He started to buzz about the circle in great agitation, wings lifting him easily into the air.
Let me out, let me out.
A promise made thrice is as close to absolute truth as you can get from a fairy. I went quickly to the circle and scuffed over the line drawn in the dirt with my foot, willing the circle to part, which it did, with a little hiss of released energy. Toot streaked out over Lake Michigan's waters again, a miniature silver comet, and vanished in a twinkling just like Santa Claus. Though I should say that Santa is a much bigger and more powerful fairy than Toot, and I don't know his true name, anyway. You never see me trying to nab St. Nick in a magic circle, even if I did. Even I don't have stones that big. I waited around, walking about to keep from falling asleep. If I did, Toot would be perfectly within his rights as a fairy to fulfill his promise by telling me the information while I was sleeping. And given that I had just now captured and humiliated him, he'd probably do something to even the scales. 2 weeks from now, he wouldn't even remember it. But if I let him have a free shot at me tonight, I might wake up with an ass's head, and I don't think that would be good for business. So I paced and waited. Toot usually took about half an hour to round up whatever it was I wanted to know. Sure enough, half an hour later, he came sparkling back in and buzzed around my head, drizzling fairy dust from his blurring wings at my eyes.
Huh, Harry, he said. I did it.
What'd you find out, Toot?
Guess.
I snorted. No.
Oh, come on, just a little guess.
I scowled, tired, irritated, but tried not to show it. Toot couldn't help being what he was.
Toot, it's late. You promised to tell me. No fun at all, he complained. No wonder you can't get a date unless someone wants to know something from you.
I blinked, and he chortled in glee.
Ha! I love it. We're watching you, Harry Dresden.
Now that was disconcerting. I had a sudden image of a dozen fairy voyeurs lingering around my apartment windows and peering inside. I'd have to take precautions to make sure they couldn't do that. Not that I was afraid of them or anything, just in case.
Just tell me, Toot, I sighed. Incoming, he shrilled,
and I held out my hand, fingers flat and palm up. He alighted in the center of my palm. I could barely feel his weight, but the sense, the aura of him ran through my skin like a tiny electric current. He stared fearlessly at my eyes. The Fae have no souls to gaze upon, and they could not fathom a mortal soul, even if they could see it.
Okay, Toot said. I talked to Blue Blossom, who talked to Red Nose, who talked to Mago Aspens. Who said that? Golden Eyes said that he was riding the pizza car when it came here last night.
Toot thrust out his chest proudly.
Pizza car? I asked, bewildered. Pizza! Toot cried jubilant. Pizza! Pizza! Pizza!
His wings fluttered again, and I tried to blink the damn fairy dust out of my eyes before I started sneezing.
Fairies like pizza? I asked. Oh, Harry, Toot breathed. Haven't you ever had pizza before?
Of course I have, I said. Toot looked wounded.
And you didn't share?
I sighed. Look, maybe I can bring you guys some pizza sometime soon to thank you for your help.
Toot leaped about in glee, hopping from one fingertip to another. Yes, yes, wait until I tell them. We'll see who laughs at Toot Toot next time.
Toot, I said, trying to calm him. Did he see anything else? Toot tittered, his expression sly and suggestive.
He said that there were mortals sporting and they needed pizza to regain their strength.
Which delivery place, Toot? The fairy blinked and stared at me as though I were hopelessly stupid.
Harry, the pizza truck.
And then he darted off skyward, vanishing into the trees above. I sighed and nodded. Toot wouldn't know the difference between Domino's and Pizza Hut. He had no frame of reference and couldn't read. Most fairies were studiously adverse to print. So I had two pieces of information. One, someone had ordered pizza to be delivered here. That meant two things. First, that someone was here last night. Second, that someone had seen them and had talked to them. Maybe I could track down the pizza driver and ask if he had seen Victor Sells. A second piece of information had been Toot's reference to sporting. Ferries didn't think too much of Mortal's ideas of sporting, unless there was a lot of nudity and lust involved. They have a penchant for shadowing necking teenagers and playing tricks on them. So Victor had been here with a lover of some kind for there to be any sport going on. I was beginning to think that Monica Sells was in denial. Her husband wasn't wandering around learning to be a sorcerer, spooky scorpion talismans notwithstanding. He was lurking about his love nest with a girlfriend, like any other husband bored with a timid and domestic wife might do under pressure. It wasn't admirable, but I guess I could understand the motivation that could cause it. The only problem was going to be telling Monica about what I discovered. I had the feeling that she wasn't going to want to listen to what I had found out. I picked up the little plate and bowl and cup and put them back into my black nylon backpack, along with the silver knife. My legs ached from too much walking and standing about. I was looking forward to getting home and getting some sleep. The man with a naked sword in his hands appeared out of the darkness, without a warning rustle of sound or whiff of magic to announce his presence. He was tall, like me, but broad and heavy-chested, and he carried his weight with a ponderous sort of dignity. Perhaps 50 years old, his listless brown hair going gray in uneven patches. He wore a long black coat, a lot like mine, but without the mantle, and his jacket and pants, too, were done in dark colors, charcoal and deep blue. His shirt was crisp, pure white, the color that you usually only see on tuxedos. His eyes were gray, touched with crow's feet at the corners and dangerous. Moonlight glinted off those eyes in the same shade it did from the brighter silver of the sword's blade. He began to walk deliberately toward me, speaking in a quiet voice as he did. Harry Blackstone, Copperfield, Dresden. Irresponsible use of true names for summoning and binding others to your will violates the fourth law of magic, the man said. I do remind you that you are under the doom of Damocles. No further violations of the law will be tolerated. The sentence for further violation is death by the sword, to be carried out at once.